You're listening to a Mash Those Buttons podcast, brought to you ad-free with the support of our patrons. Visit mashthosebuttons.com or stay tuned after the show for more details. I want to say this about EA. If EA does not have a Mandalorian video game in production, in some form, even if it's in the planning phase, they do not deserve to have that Star Wars license.
Okay. You know, the Mandalorian feels like what a video game movie or video game TV show should feel like, except that it's not based on a video game.
Yes. And even like the way he gets like his upgrades, you know, with the armor,
mm-hmm,
you know,
yes.
Even the way he gets his upgrades, like when he first got the bird whistle thing, it was like, yo, that's like being in a game.
You literally see his armor changes. He equips new stuff. Like it is a video game that we are watching. We're watching somebody else play a game. That's what we're going to find out. It's not that they're filming this with all those LED screens. They're actually playing this. They built the actual thing in the Unreal Engine. And that's what we've been watching. This is just somebody playing a new video game.
Hello and welcome to the Mash Those Buttons show, where we cover the latest in games, community, culture, and everything in between. This week, we're going to talk about the Cyberpunk 2077 delay again. We're going to talk EA being fined 500,000 euros a week. And we're also going to talk about Assassin's Creed and Netflix. This is episode number 27, and this is for the week of November 2nd, 2020. I am Jared, but you can call me Ja, and I am here with the Games Industry Public Defender, the Scourge of Ironforge and Microsoft Shill, Nick Zelenkevich.
Hey, how's everybody doing? By Microsoft.
And Nick, how are you doing?
I'm hanging in there. I mean, I guess things are good. I don't know. I guess I'm excited. This could be our last show, depending on how things go this week in the country.
Yeah, we'll see. And I think the thing that's going to make it a little worse is we probably won't see on Tuesday. Like, we'll probably have to wait a little bit longer than that.
No, so. It's going to be fun times, but we'll worry about that later. But overall, I guess things are good. I don't know. How are you doing? How's stuff going for you?
Cannot complain. This week, I think I finally got into Ghost Runner. Well, I finally got my hands on Ghost Runner, I should say. It came out, the full game. I know we talked about it on this show. I want to say in May. I think May is when we did something on Ghost Runner on this show. And now the full game is out. But I was a little disappointed on launch because on launch it had a bug where I couldn't put the game in full screen, and there was that caused an issue that actually kind of revealed another bug with the game, where if you weren't playing in full screen, all of your clicks may not register, which is massively important in that game. So, you know, I'm playing the game and I go to like hook on to something, I go to hit somebody, and it doesn't register. So it actually made it a very frustrating experience, to say the least. So, but 2 days later, they fixed it. So I finally got to play the game as intended. It looks great. It runs great. It's kind of like almost like a Cyberpunk palate cleanser. Cause that's the, not palate cleanser, but like appetizer. There we go. Wrong word.
Might be a little early for the appetizer in that case though.
Yeah. So it's like a Cyberpunk appetizer. That's the aesthetic, right? And, you know, a couple things like they didn't show in the demo. Like, so the video that plays before the demo loads is the opening cinematic, but it's not the full opening cinematic. I think the cinematic has like an additional 30 seconds after it, and it kind of explains why you are in the beginning the way you are. other than that, they also didn't show like the upgrade system, which you finally got your hands on, which is actually kind of cool because the upgrades are in the shape of Tetris blocks. And you basically have to arrange them in this grid. And that's how you can figure out how, you know, it's kind of like a puzzle getting all of your upgrades in. But then if you don't put upgrades in certain slots, you actually get a buff on your cooldowns and things like that. So you can choose not to put upgrades in and kind of play that way. So that's fun. But if I had to describe it, it's almost like a first person Hotline Miami to a degree. Because one shot kills you, one hit kills you, and it's like an instant respawn, you know, which helps because you might end up dying a lot. Like every area you go into, you're basically just trying to figure out the most effective method to move around that area so that you can hit, kill all the enemies, or sometimes the enemies are shielded. So you got to find out where the source is coming from and destroy that and then go back and kill the enemies. And then you start to get, you know, the varying types of enemies and, you know, dealing with that. So I've liked it so far. I've played it for about 4 or 5 hours, I think. It's not an incredibly big game, so it's probably going to last, I think, around 10 hours or so. And it's built for speed running. So I'm actually curious to see some of that because, you know, I want to see some of these people, like, kind of just crush the speed runs on these levels and see how they do it. But I enjoyed it. I did stream it when it came out. I might do it again now that the game is in better working order. It does have like a kind of a story, you know, but I'm not that, it feels like I'm not that far into it. So it's not, the story is not that in depth. So it also has a little puzzle solving too, which is interesting because that's how you get your upgrades. Sometimes you got to go into these virtual realms and do these puzzles. So that's actually pretty cool. But I mean, other than that, I'm still slacking on all the other games I need to be playing right now, which I was thinking about maybe doing a game of the year thing for us early in January.
Oh, yeah. You know? Yes. Yes. Actually, it's time to start really thinking about that, isn't it? If we not already. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I kind of really need to get through some of these other games. So go ahead.
Well, lucky for you, the game of the year has been delayed to December, so you have extra time before you have to prepare anything about that.
Yeah, we'll see. I did appreciate that Cyberpunk getting delayed, which we'll hop into here in a second, and I'll explain why. But before we get into that, I'd like to welcome any first-time listeners. Thanks for taking the time to, you know, check out the show. And I'd like to thank and welcome back any returning listeners, as well as give a special thanks to our supporters on both Patreon and Twitch. And if you want to know when we go live on Twitch, just follow us at twitch.tv/matchthosebuttons. And you can also follow us on Twitter, which is twitter.com/TheMashNetwork. And, you know, if you want to, you know, chat with us sometimes, we're in our Discord at mash.gg/Discord. We'd love to have you join our community. Yeah, and lots of good people in there that like to play, you know, games, as you would expect from a gaming podcast. So, yes, mash.gg/Discord. But yeah, let's hop into our first topic. Cyberpunk 2077 has been delayed and will now release on December 10th. There was an article on Polygon talking about the statement. Actually, you know what was funny about that statement? Other companies just started putting stuff like on that yellow background, like putting announcements on that yellow background. Did you see that? It kind of became like a little meme.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, it became like a meme for a day. I thought it would have been funny for Blizzard to make their announcement on that background. I thought I was going to see that, but they didn't.
Well, so other companies, they were making official announcements, though, and they were just stealing the background, like, or were they doing, like, joke back?
It was kind of like a joke. It was like, you know, I think Guilty Gear put something up like, you know, we decided to put this announcement on a yellow background today, and that was the whole thing.
Well, that's kind of, I guess that's one way to do it, yeah.
Yeah, so it was kind of funny. But yeah, so there was an article from Polygon that talked a bit about the announcement. And there's a quote here that they have from CD Projekt Red. It says, "The biggest challenge for us right now is shipping the game on current gen, next gen, and PC at the same time, which requires that we prepare and test 9 versions of it while working from home. Since Cyberpunk 2077 evolved towards almost being a next-gen title, somewhere along the line, we need to make sure everything works well and every version runs smoothly. We are aware it might seem unrealistic when someone says that 21 days can make any difference in such a massive and complex game, but they really do. And of course they do when people are working 100-hour work weeks. Like, yeah, 21 days makes it a ton of a difference. Like, it's how many hours you can squeeze into a day.
And if anybody's good at squeezing hours into a day, it's CD Projekt Red.
Yes, apparently so. And they also go on to say, some of you might also be wondering what these words mean in light of us saying we achieved Gold Master some time ago. Passing certification or going gold means the game is ready, can be completed, and has all content in it. But it doesn't mean we stop working on it and raise the quality bar. On the contrary, this is a time where many improvements are being made, which will then be distributed via day zero patch. This is the time period. We undercalculated. So, I mean, I don't think people really thought that the game wasn't complete. I mean, I think the game has been complete for some time, you know, but you know, they're still fixing bugs and ironing things out. And, you know, that's what they're doing. You know, there was a point in history where you had to have all that stuff ironed out before you even got the game to go gold because, you know, that was it. Like, once the game was out, the game was out.
Well, in order to go gold, you have to have, like, the major bugs ironed out as far as, like, can you start the game up without it completely crashing your system? And right. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff that you need to have out of the way. And there's actually a situation where I was reading, I think it was the Ask a Game Dev blog, where they were talking about this. And they were saying, like, you can kind of, like, go gold provisionally, where you have, like, the major stuff out of the way, but you might have some fairly, like, major but not, like, game-crashing bugs that still need to be addressed. And you can go gold with those with the understanding that you have to still pass certification on your day zero patch. And so what they're saying it sounds like is they cleared the gold hurdle, but then it was on the day zero patch. It sounds like what happened is they went for some kind of certification on that, didn't get that there might be some kind of major game crashing bug with that. And now they got to go back to the drawing board, but they got to go fix all that stuff. And so they didn't get the certification they were expecting at that point. Again, that's all speculation, but that's speculation from somebody who understands game development. So I'll take their word on it.
Right.
But I mean, yeah,
go ahead.
Well, no, I guess the point stands is that they're still fixing bugs, and there's more bugs with more severity than they were expecting to have at this point, and they need a few extra weeks to take care of that, so that's what they're doing.
Yeah, and that's another thing. It's only 21 days, right? It's only 3 weeks. It's only 3 weeks. Like, that's it. And if they pushed it, actually, to be honest with you, if they had pushed it back to next year, I would have been perfectly fine with that, too.
I think a lot of people would have. Especially with it being like, not just like end of the year anyway, but I feel like there's a lot of stuff coming out, especially that week in November as it was. There's a lot of stuff lined up. And even then throughout the end of the year, there's a lot of stuff coming that, yeah. We've got a backlog. Now we've got like a front log. Yeah. Yeah. If we can space out the front log a little bit, move it to the end of move it into next year. You're going to have people complain either way, but, the game will come in time. We will enjoy it in time unless society completely breaks down in the next week, in which case it didn't matter when it came out.
Yeah. Because we are preparing some content for Cyberpunk, and I'm like, great, now I just have more time to get it done, you know? But yeah, the calendar is already packed, you know, like Watch Dogs Legion just came out. That seems like it's going to be pretty massive. The next Assassin's Creed is coming out. That's going to be pretty massive. You got a bunch of, even though the Xbox doesn't have any, exclusive launch titles, there's still a bunch of launch titles coming out with the Xbox. There's still a bunch of games coming out around that time. You know, the new Dirt's coming out. I just said the new Assassin's Creed, because that's coming out along with the Xbox launch as well. And those are massive games. And, you know, Cyberpunk is probably, you looking at it like 100 hours or something like that, you know, to play that game or finish that game. So, yeah, I don't mind at all. I mean, if Cyberpunk was the only game you were waiting for, you only have 3 more weeks. It's not that bad, you know. But Yeah, it actually gives people more time maybe to get a better graphics card too. I don't know if you can get your hands on a 3070 or a 3080 or, you know, whatever AMD's putting out these days. But, you know, it's not that bad. So, yeah, Cyberpunk, 3 more weeks out. And, you know, if they delayed it again, I wouldn't be mad at them.
I don't know. I got no dog in this hunt here. I mean, I guess in, from a... from just a general fan of games, I'm a little disappointed with CD Projekt Red over the way they've handled the crunch and the oh, we won't do crunch, but we're going to do crunch and that not. But I'm not, you know, I've, you know, let me hand in my gamer card now. I've never played The Witcher or Witcher 3 or whatever. I really haven't played a CD Projekt Red game. So, you know, so I'm not planning on getting Cyberpunk, but I couldn't help but laugh, and maybe it's kind of bad because I mean there are people who are, you know, they're stuck working, you know, extensively for the next few weeks. But I couldn't help but laugh just because this game has been delayed so many times. It's I don't want to say it's reached like Duke Nukem Forever.
Oh God,
levels no. But I think it's the closest we've come in a while. I think I don't know.
In a while, maybe I guess from newer games. I guess, you know, it's nowhere near that vaporware
stuff. Oh yeah. No, I mean Duke Nukem Forever actually won like a vaporware award, and then like years later it did finally come out. I mean, so we're nowhere near that level, but
and Duke Nukem should have never came out.
It should have stayed vaporware. Yes.
Yeah, but, it should have stayed vaporware. So
I don't know. I have to imagine the people on the team just want this to end.
And well, it's not going to end when the game comes out. When the game comes out, but
it can't get to whatever the resolution is going to be if it never comes out. If they just keep kicking the can down the road, it's a long road. So catch up to the can. But by the end of the year, the game will come out. You know, hopefully everything will be fine. We'll all be fine.
Yeah. So, but there is some bad news for Cyberpunk 2077. Besides the fact that it's delayed, and I know they actually took a bit of a, I don't know if their stock went down, but they definitely took a bit of a hit, like in terms of confidence from their investors because of this. But also because they're coming out in December now, they are out of the Game of the Year contention for the Game Awards. So. Yeah, that sucks. I think that sucks a bit. I get the Game Awards, but how many years have the Game Awards been around for? Officially, like this version of the Game Awards.
It's been a few, like 5 or 6 years, isn't it? Maybe more?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And, you know, games released in December are not eligible for contention for that year.
So eligible for next year,
2021, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that happened to Smash Brothers a couple years ago where they couldn't get counted or they weren't in contention. And I know Jeff Keighley, he was on a podcast. I think he was on like the Kind of Funny podcast earlier in October. Maybe it was more recently. But he said, you know, that they don't run on a regular calendar year, just like the Grammys, the Oscars, and the Tonys. But I still have a problem with that because games are not like movies, music, and television, right? Movies, music, and television do not get better every year. They don't. Especially, and they don't get substantially better every year. You know? So, if, you know, I thought the Grammy cutoff is like August, I think? Maybe? Or does it shift around? It's not like it's... I think it's... I can't remember exactly when it is. I think it's August. I think it's like August, right? So like, you know, if you put out if the greatest album of 2020 comes out in November and that is still the best album that came out, that there's a good chance that still might be the best album that comes out in 2021 as well. There's still a good chance for that because innovation in movies, music, and television is not as, frequent as video games. It's just not. You know, technology improves, first of all. Techniques improve, you know. And so, you know, yeah. Like, and don't get me wrong, like, compared to the amount of video games that come out, you might also say it's kind of rare, right? But we're talking about triple A titles, right? You know, and every year, like, you know, new AAA titles are coming out that are kind of, you know, beating the shit out of the AAA titles that came out the year before, you know?
On the one hand, and I don't mean to disparage CD Projekt Red, because they do great work, or so I've been told, haven't played the games, but it's been very presumptive of the community to just say this is going to be game of the year. People have been saying this pretty much for the entire year. They're like, oh, CD Projekt Red is, you know, they're putting out Cyberpunk 2077. That's going to be the game of the next year. Close the book on it. We're done. Who was it that put out Transistor? They did Transistor, but they did Hades. Supergiant. Supergiant did Hades, Supergiant. Right?
Yeah, Supergiant did Hades.
Getting
yeah.
nothing but praise everywhere I've looked.
Yeah.
And I think that or Ghost of Tsushima are now like the front runners to be the game of the year. Maybe Last of Us 2. I don't know. I think that could be like a dark horse. Although that had, you know, that had some other issues that maybe, you know, people might not vote for it, whatever.
That was community issues. We'll talk about that in a second.
I'm just saying there were issues in general, but I've seen people talking up Ghost. I've seen people talking up Hades, a lot of people talking up Hades lately. And it feels like to just sit there and look and say it's going to be Cyberpunk 2077 and just, you know, like as much as I apologize for potentially being disrespectful to CD Projekt Red at the beginning of my little monologue here, it is just as disrespectful to say it's going to be Cyberpunk 2077 automatically to Ghost of Tsushima, to Hades, to Last of Us 2, and be like, no, there's no competition. Like, none of these games can possibly live up to the work the CD Projekt Red is going to do with Cyberpunk 2077. And so I'm glad for those games. I'm glad for those games that's out of the way now. We've moved on. And if Cyberpunk 2077 is going to be so good that it was a no-brain, hands down, game of the year 2020, if it gets pushed into next year's category, then you know what? Every game next year, you've got time now. Fix yourselves. Get up your game. You know, get your presentation together, because you know what's coming. You know what's stepping on your doorstep. And make sure that you're ready to compete, because you know the competition has been brought.
Well, go ahead.
And I just want to say one last thing. If the Games Awards, like, yes, it's important, but at the end of the day, it's still going to sell. It's still going to be regarded as a great game. Maybe they can't put like Game of the Year on the box or something, but I'm sure they'll find some way to do that. And I feel like this is maybe we're making a little bit more out of this than not. I don't know. Maybe I'm disrespecting the Games Awards now. I should apologize to Jeff Keighley, because I'm not giving it the same reverence I would like the Oscars or the Emmys.
Yeah, well, I do want to say that. I think a lot of people, more and more people, are viewing the Game Awards as the game's Oscars, Grammys, Tonys, and I still do not. I'm like, okay, it is an awards ceremony for sure, you know, but I'm not necessarily sold that this is, you know, like, this is it. Sekiro got Game of the Year in 2019. No, I'm sorry. It's I can't. Like, I can't. I can't get down with that. I actually, even on 201X, I'm pretty sure we gave it to Control. We gave it to Control over Sekiro. So that was a little disrespectful of them to give it to Sekiro over Control, in my opinion. But yeah, I mean, I never thought it was a shoo-in for Game of the Year, but it definitely needs to be talked about in this year. I don't think, you know, the Game Awards should be, first of all, they should probably have it, the Game Awards should probably be done in like February of the next year, in my opinion. Because, so you can release a game November 30th and be eligible for the Game Awards, which is like, you know, a week or two after that. Or maybe I'm a little early, but let's say November 19th, because that's when it was going to come out originally. You could release a game that we know is going to be long on November 19th, and by December 10th, somebody will have had to play through it, kind of meditate on it, and then compare it to a whole bunch of other games to see if it's Game of the Year. Like, that's too short. Like, you should just wait. They should just be waiting for all the games to come out for the year, and then in like February, you know what I'm saying? That's, I think, a better representation of what should happen. You know, I still think it should be counting this year. And in terms of the other games that you were talking about, you know, I know The Last of Us caught some flack, you know, obviously from the community, but not that much flack because it sold, you know, it sold a lot to the point that there are rumors, and, you know, they could be flat rumors, but rumors that they might be doing a DLC for it.
My point there is mostly that there was some negative commentary against The Last of Us. I heard like nothing bad about Ghosts and Hades. And I've heard, and even like the only thing I've heard about Hades is like super positive reviews. So just as somebody paying attention to the community, I feel like Hades is like the front runner just based off like buzz. But I mean, any three of those games from my perspective would be a worthy game of the year.
I would say Hades is definitely the best roguelike I've ever played, personally. But it was built to be friendly to people who don't generally like roguelikes either. But then again, Dead Cells was an amazing roguelike too. It's just that Hades, I think, has like a better story to it. But yeah, lots of people like Hades. Hades is a much smaller package too, because it's a roguelike. So I think it's easier to zero in and like it. But you said you haven't heard anything bad about Ghost of Tsushima. Ghost of Tsushima can get kind of boring.
Well, there you go. Like, there you go. It's no longer game of the year. Out of the running. Just kicked it out. Boom. Hades is your game of the year now.
I like Ghost of Tsushima, but man, I kind of got... It just felt kind of repetitive to a degree, to a point that I kind of stopped playing it for a bit, and then I pick it up, and then I stop playing it, and I pick it up. Whereas with The Last of Us Part 2, even the part that I did not like playing when I was playing it originally, I still was, the gameplay was still good enough to get me through it. You know, I think The Last of Us Part 2 will be in the runnings for sure for Game of the Year. It might be a front runner. Because, I mean, from a technical standpoint, from a dialogue standpoint, from a gameplay standpoint, it's a good game. Most people who are complaining about it complain about the story. They complain about the story. They didn't like what happened to Joel. And, you know, that basically ruins their experience throughout the rest of the game. But if you could take that out and, like, just play the game itself, man, it's good. But we're talking about the organization that gave Sekiro Game of the Year in 2019, and not Control.
Who votes on the Game Awards? Is it other members of the industry? Is there any like fan polls? Like who makes?
I don't think there's no fan polls to my knowledge. I'm pretty sure they have industry people. They have like a panel of industry people vote. I don't know if they do it per award. If they do it that way. But they, I'm pretty sure that's how they do it. But, you know, Cyberpunk's going to be in the running for our Game of the Year when we talk about that, Nick.
Best games of 2020, number one.
Oh, man. So I hope everybody got that reference.
I hope so too. Yeah.
If you didn't, please go listen to 201X. We did a great job patting myself on the back there. You too, Nick. You did an excellent job.
Best host of 201X, Jarrett Redding.
Oh, man. Okay, so let's go ahead and move on. Let's talk about EA getting fined 500,000 euros a week in the Netherlands. So a Dutch judge ruled against EA, and now they're going to get fined 500K a week in euros. Basically, what has happened is that the Netherlands Gaming Authority won a case against EA where they were, is the technical term suing them? Did they sue them? Or, you know, they basically brought a case against EA. Because they said that FIFA Ultimate Team violates gambling rules in the Netherlands. And this happened in 2018, and EA challenged it. And on Thursday, a judge basically ruled against EA and says, no, this is correct. You will be fined. So they're getting fined 250K euros against EA, and then also against their Swiss subsidiary. So essentially, they are getting fined 500,000 euros a week until they remove loot boxes from FIFA Ultimate Team.
I sure hope they're making a heck of a lot of money out of those loot boxes then, if that's how much it's costing them.
Yeah, like, that is rough, like, because if the loot box functionality is built into the game, you can't just turn it off, because that means the players can't get the stuff that they need. That means the players can't get the stuff that they need, you know? So, yeah, I mean, do you disable it? Like, what do you do now? Do you just take the hit until you can get somebody on it? You know, tell them to stop working on Anthem and work on this. <You know>? Get this done.
They got so much they're doing on Anthem, though.
So EA had something to say. They said players all over the world have enjoyed FIFA and the FIFA Ultimate Team mode for many years. And as such, we are disappointed by the decision and what it may mean for our Dutch community. We do not believe that our products and services violate gambling laws in any way. We are appealing this decision and will seek to avoid a situation impacting the ability of Dutch players to fully experience and enjoy FIFA Ultimate Team. So they also said that they're willing to work with Dutch authorities to come to a resolution. Like, well, what do you want us to do? And they're going to be like, take the loot boxes out.
Pretty straightforward in that regard, yes.
Yeah, exactly. We want you to remove the loot boxes. So, yeah, I mean, I can see that. Those are the rules. And now, like, EA, you know, they just need to... EA and other publishers need to pay more attention to that. I mean, honestly, it feels like it's time for the loot box to die. Like, there's so many places across the world that are, you know, not okay with loot boxes. And in some places, like, you can do loot boxes, but you have to reveal the odds of getting each type of item in the loot box. You know, now I think the bulk of players have self-control, right? Where, you know, they just won't buy loot boxes. Like, I don't buy loot boxes. But I think the primary concern here is children. Like, well, children will buy the loot boxes, you know, because children don't have much of a concept of money. Actually, shit, I know adults that don't have a concept of money. You know, so yeah, you know, that's who this is really targeted for, is that, you know, they put, and FIFA is a everybody plays it style of game, you know. There's no age limit on that. And on top of that, you know, it's FIFA, so soccer is huge. It is if we had to choose a game to play against aliens, it would be soccer. that's what it would be. It is the world's game. So yeah, I mean, that has a really far reach, and they're gonna appeal, but this is them just trying to, you know, tie it up in litigation, which is still costing them money, but it's not costing them 500,000 euros a week. You know, I keep wanting to say 500 euros a week, but that ain't it, man. It's not even 5,000, it's 500,000. That's a lot of money. That is a lot of money, which they are really trying not to pay right now, you know. So that is, you got a new CEO type money. <You know? laughs> Somebody stepping down type money to be losing, you know. So we'll see what comes out of that. But, you know, I do wish the U.S. would take a stricter stance on the loot box model, you know, because everybody else is, right? And like I said, a lot of us have self-control, but some people do not. It is not helpful, you know.
I think, as you've kind of pointed out, there's plenty of other ways to make revenue, and the loot box seems like it's on its way out. I think, not that regulators need to get involved at this point, but I think most games are kind of just naturally moving on. I mean, they'll still be loot boxes around, but it's not nearly as prevalent as it was before.
Yeah, but you also want to kind of set a precedent that, you know, when you have these predatory style, you know, styles of monetizing your game, we're not gonna go for it. That precedent needs to be set, you know.
Well, also,
so they stop trying new stuff.
Well, I think also when you see cases like this going on in Europe, I think companies, when they come up with a new game, they're like, they're not even gonna think of loot boxes or something like that, because like, it's not, we can't do it in Europe. It's definitely not worth it, because look at what EA is paying. And if we're not gonna put it in for Europe, we're just, why bother putting it in for the States? Just move on.
You know, I'll tell you something that's kind of related to this, but not. But anytime, the only CEO I think about when I think of like big publishers is Yves Guillemot. That's the only CEO I really think of, because I know, you know, he's the one that pops into my head first, because I don't even know who the CEO of EA is right now. And Bobby Kotick, I just don't talk about him because, you know, he's just there to make money. That's all he does. Like, he is a money-making machine. So I think about Yves Guillemot and him just picking up a paper and reading that, and he's just like, yikes. that's what plays in my head.
To be fair, Yves is saying yikes for a lot of reasons these days.
That is true. That is true. So, but let's talk about Anthem a little bit. And when I say a little bit, I do mean a little bit. we got some information on the Anthem 2.0 update. And there was this article. Actually, I found it because it was an article in Forbes from Paul Tassi. And you know what? I want to say something real quick. Everybody, like, I saw somebody say that the leading games journalist in the world is Jason Schreier. Is that like
Schreier?
Schreier, yeah, Jason Schreier. And, you know, everybody gives big props to Jason Schreier. Nobody gives big props to Paul Tassi.
Paul Tassi cranks out the content. He is a machine.
He is.
He is to Forbes gaming articles what Bobby Kotick is to dollars.
Yeah, like Paul Tassi. And I haven't always gotten along with Paul. We're on a first name basis. But I haven't always gotten along with Paul with things that he has been saying. His opinions have not always mirrored mine. But at the same time, it's like, you know, you got a game recognized game. Like, he has been in there for a long time. You know, he's not necessarily cracking out these, you know, these hard hitting, oh, this place is mistreating their employees. And this place, that's how Jason Schreier got big, because he's been revealing all this industry mistreatment. It's kind of his thing right now. Not to minimize it, but I'm just saying that's what he does. But he gets a lot of behind the scenes information, which is also hard. That's also hard. That requires contacts and knowing people and stuff like that. But, you know, give Paul his props too. Give Paul his props.
But if you follow looter games like Destiny or Diablo, not so much recently, or what else, like Borderlands or Anthem in this case, or what's that? Was it Genshin Impact or something? What's that new game that
the one that Pop-Tart plays every day? Yeah, it's Genshin Impact.
Yeah, he's been playing that a lot. Or if you like The Walking Dead, Paul Tassi's your guy.
Yeah, so he wrote an article on Forbes, but there's also a blog from BioWare, and Christian Daly. I think that's not his last name. It might be Daly. But I have Daly here. He's leading the reboot team and provided the first update since the summer. Now, if you remember, we talked about this as well, that BioWare has essentially formed a small, very small team on developing the, you know, basically what's going to be Anthem 2.0. I think they said it was only 6 people or something like that. So we're not talking about prototyping and work and stuff like that. We are talking pure theory here, you know, at this point. And for the first, we got our first update since the summer, and they dropped some information. So there's going to be 11 total equipment slots now, primary and secondary weapons that serve different functions, mods and artifacts that replace armor components. You unlock abilities through a new point skill tree rather than getting them through loot drops. Inscriptions that improve synergies but are not the entire defining feature of builds anymore. Javelins have multiple specifications that each have their own advanced skill tree. A javelin is the Iron Man suit, if you didn't know. That's what they're called. he gave an example. Is if you rank up a more generic tree in your ranger javelin before picking up a longbow specialty and unlocking an entirely new constellation of skills for that subclass. So just a couple things. So, you know, a lot of these, I think all of these updates that they're making are to make your javelins feel more special, right? To make your specialty feel more special, to actually, one, give you different options, like, 'cause it's only 4 javelins, I think, and they give you more options. So you basically, each of the javelins is going to feel more special now. And then if even if you take like one up each javelin, right, they can have multiple subclasses so that they even feel special. So you can take two rangers maybe into a mission and the two rangers can do two different things, essentially. That's what all of these were. Now on the blog, they had some images kind of showing what it will look like in the menu. So I'm assuming that also is, you know, not necessarily in game. They haven't been putting anything into the game yet, but they're making progress. But my question is like, how soon are we going to see these changes? Anthem came out at the beginning of 2019. Are you going to take into 2022 to actually push anything out? That seems like a lot, you know, for a game that's already out.
This looks like the kind of developer blog that we get for like, let's talk about a Diablo 4 system. Let's break that down for a little bit. And we get like those little updates like every like quarterly or whatever. And that game, you can't see, I'm shrugging. Yeah. But like, you know, who knows when that game's coming out? Like 2022 at the earliest here. I mean, one would have to think that if this is the way forward, then they're starting to ramp up the team, because those six people alone are not going to, you know, design and then implement and then, you know, maintain Anthem. But, you know, they're going to have to bring people back to get them to actually work on the code base and whatnot. So maybe they're at a point where, you know, they've expanded beyond those six people. Like, this is the output. They had their little group meeting. And now they're ready to actually start putting this into the game. And so they're bringing people in to actually start the implementation phase. One would hope, but who knows? Who knows what's going on here? And this is just, I mean, he does mention like No Man's Sky earlier, where it's like that was a game that came out, was very subpar compared to expectations for it. And was it Hello Games that did that? They just like put their nose to the grindstone and they cranked content out at no additional cost. They're still cranking content out now. The game is completely different now than it was before. And there's so much more to do and see and whatnot, that it's mind blowing. And maybe that's the kind of thing we're going to see with Anthem. Although like Hello Games was doing it sort of their own accord. Like they're not owned by anybody to my knowledge. They're not, you know, they're not beholden to anybody to like, oh, like this game needs to hit certain numbers or we need to have, you know, such recurring revenue or something. You know, Anthem being part of BioWare, being part of EA, it's like how much rope is EA going to give them here? Because, you know, as we've already established, EA is on the hook for quite a few euros in some other departments. So They may look at their balance sheet and be like, Anthem really just ain't worth it. But it almost feels like they put out Anthem because they needed to put out Anthem just to shut up like some executives or something. And now they're like, okay, we got that done. Now let's just leave that as like a hollow shell. And that's out there. And we're going to go out and actually make the game we wanted to make all along when nobody's paying attention, because now we actually have to like produce in a way. We'll see. I don't know. I have to feel like if you're a betting man, like Anthem's not going to make it. Like you're looking at this. This is like a guy that like fell off a cliff and he's just like limping and you're like, no, dude, you're not.
Anthem came out in a worse state than the original Destiny.
Yes.
And the original Destiny limped along because the first expansion came out, then the second expansion came out, and that just kind of, you know, helped it limp along until the Taken King came out, which did make Destiny better. It did make Destiny better for sure. But, and don't get me wrong, Taken King wasn't the end all be all. Like that just helped with some of the problems. But, you know, if this comes out in 2022, Destiny will be on their, like, you know, expansion, the last of the three expansions they already talked about. Like, yeah, like, it's Beyond Light this year. It is the Witch Queen next year in 2021, and in 2022, it's Lightfall. So they'll be on Lightfall by the time they get this game up and running, period. Because this game is not up and running. It is not. It was released. It was boring. It was not fun. I don't even know if people are playing it now. Like, it's crazy. And so, yeah, they basically have an early access title out right now that they are not updating. By the way, GTFO is getting more updates than this game. Hades, got more updates in this game, you know? So you got this game, this early access title, essentially, that people have paid for, you know? And you're telling me, like, you still might be, or they're not saying they're going to be 2 years out, but from what we can see, like, I can't see them having something ready by the end of 2021. I just can't see them flipping that switch and having it ready to go by 2021, you know? And I'm sure this group of six people are meeting every day to figure out what they're going to do. But while these six people are working on this, there is a larger team at Bungie working on what they're doing in 2023 right now. You know what I'm saying? They're currently working on the content for 2021 and 2022. Their six person team met 2 years ago. You know, like it's crazy. Like, I just don't see how they compete, because they would have to be so, like, the Anthem 2.0 update would have to be so far in the future, right? Like, it would have to be, yeah, like, really far in the future, taking into account things that they just don't know, like, especially since that people aren't really playing their game right now. It took Destiny forever to get to a spot that the community was generally like, this is good. Like, we're happy here. And that took years of feedback from an active community.
Well, the thing is, though, that a game like Anthem, it doesn't have a monthly subscription. It doesn't have any paid DLC. There's no revenue coming in to keep the lights on. So if nobody's really there, if nobody's playing the game, there aren't a lot of lights to keep on. So basically, it's kind of like they've got the game servers, like, kind of like in storage, basically, at this point. And I know they're mostly virtual and whatnot, but like, the infrastructure is kind of there. It's in storage. It's probably minimalized. And in a way, it's like, what difference is it if they had just completely shut everything down? I mean, we saw Amazon take a game that was clearly undercooked and then roll it back to beta and then just flat out kill it. I mean, from, you know, EA's perspective, if they said, okay, you know, we're not going to give up on Anthem, but we're going to just shut it all down for as many people as they have actually playing and how much it costs them to keep the servers on, is there even, you know, does it even matter? I mean, I have to think that's, you know, at a very base level, that's got to be relatively low. I mean, they're still going to want to fund people on the team there. I have to think that it might almost, in some ways, maybe cost more to shut everything down, move on with everything, and then have to put everything back in place to ramp it up later. Just leave the systems as they are. It can't hurt to leave things on, you know, because at least, you know, maybe two people are playing. Like, there's at least a germinating community, as tiny as it is, somewhere out there. And then you've got at least got that, you know. It's like the, you know, it's like in all the games that we play where it's like, oh, there was like a small community. We were huddled around like a little fire or whatever, and then you get a spark and everything ignites. Like, that's kind of what they're thinking. Like, they're just gonna come back and blow it all up. And I could see them trying to really, like, blow out a big you know, like a big trailer at maybe this year's E3. Well, if they do it, well, E3, whatever form that is, you know, again,
right? Yeah,
you know, call Jeff Keighley. But I could see them trying to come back with like a lot of hype, like Anthem 2.0, boom, here it is. And they do that at this year's games, summer of games or whatever. And, you know, maybe that's for the end of the year this year. Maybe that's for early or end of next year. Maybe that's early 2022, you know, and in a way kind of be like, look, I mean, we've seen games get remade. Final Fantasy 14 managed to pull this off. Not to this degree, though. Not to this degree.
Yes, exactly. That's what I was going to say.
Anthem's a punchline at this point. Anthem is a joke. It's nothing. And yeah, to see what they're going to do here, it's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, I think EA, because EA says they're committed to Anthem, you know, to getting it up and running. But I honestly think if some other developer comes to them, like, you know, another in-house developer comes to them with a, you know, like another dungeon crawler like that, like an online, you know, persistent dungeon crawler, they're going to dump Anthem and go with the other one. Because, like, you know, okay, so take it, you know, for example, right? Windows 10 was originally supposed to be Windows 8.2. The reason it wasn't Windows 8.2 and they changed to Windows 10 is because the Windows 8 name had already been sullied. It's too difficult to get people to buy Windows 8, even if it's 8.2. Doesn't make a difference. So let's just call it Windows 10. Same thing. Like, it's going to be hard to get people to buy into Anthem. You know, and I think EA just wants one of those games. They want a Destiny type of game. Ubisoft has theirs. It's The Division, you know? So Ubisoft has one. Activision had one. EA wants theirs. And that's what they're really looking for. But I think if another developer comes to them and says, hey, we have this idea for this dungeon crawler, and here it is, and they can get it done with the, like, let's say the amount of money it's going to take to redo this, to redo Anthem, then they might do it, you know? So we'll see what they do. And another big question is, like, is this update going to be free? If it's not free, forget about it. Forget about it. Because even I paid for Anthem. Like, you still owe me Anthem. you still owe me Anthem here. So, yeah, like, if this is not a free update, then peace. forget about it. Like, you're not going, we paid to get into your early access. You didn't update your early access. And now you want to charge me again? No thanks, bub. You know? So, all right, let's move on. Phil Spencer says they are not trying to turn everyone to a subscriber. This is an article from GamesIndustry.biz, which actually talks about an episode of the Dropped Frames podcast where Phil Spencer was talking about, you know, Games Pass and, you know, maybe probably people thinking that they're trying to get everybody into Games Pass because they're trying to get rid of retail. But he says, you know, I've had conversations with a lot of these developers about what our real long-term goals are. We get questions about, hey, is this some kind of way to secure a bunch of players then rack up the price to a new level? I say, there's no plan for us to do anything like that. They will. We will. That's me saying that. They will. We like the value of Games Pass, that Games Pass is today. And from a business model, it's completely sustainable the way it is. And I mean that. So let's be realistic. They're going to up the price of the service. They will. Especially when they're in a much better position. I can't see them not upping the price, because upping the price will allow them to do even more than they are right now. It will. But I just don't see them keeping it the price they are, especially with like $15 for Games Pass Ultimate. Yeah. If you don't expect them to change the price at some point, I think you're being a bit foolish. But then he says, it's not like I've got a crystal ball and can tell everybody what Games Pass is going to look like 5 years from now. What I can say is that our motivation is not to turn everybody into a subscriber. We think it's an option for people. We're not pulling our games out of retail. In fact, we've expanded. We've put them on Steam. We have some games in the Epic Store. We are out there to give more options to go buy our games. We obviously support free to play games, which don't have a big role today in Games Pass. He also says, but I'll be honest, there are developers and studios that are coming and building almost specific models that works in subscription, where it is hard to think about how that translates exactly to retail. But that's kind of been a thing since the early 2000s, right? You know, World of Warcraft, you were able to, and once high-speed internet became a thing, and it was when World of Warcraft first came out, why buy a WoW disc? Just get it from their store and then download the game, you know? So that's been around for a while, but, right now they're all about options. And, you know, the thing about Games Pass, I think it's very attractive to new gamers, right? Very attractive. One of my friend, he just got a PC and he has Games Pass Ultimate. And so he's been using his Games Pass Ultimate to play his PC games. I mean, we've been playing Gears of War, and I have the Steam version. He has the Xbox. He has the Games Pass version, and it's been fine, you know? So I think, it's a great option for new players. But then you have people like me. Like, my games library is huge already. I don't need to pay for a subscription to access all these games I already have, you know? I think what we'll probably see going in the future are, and I don't know if Microsoft is going to start this, or, you know, I don't know who's going to start this, but at some point, somebody is going to make a game exclusive to a subscription service. They are. And that's when I want to see what's going to happen when a game starts being exclusive to a subscription service. How is that going to be handled? You know, because from what Phil is saying right now, I agree. It's like the options are good. You know, not everybody wants a subscription. So I guess we'll see.
You brought up World of Warcraft.
And if I had talked to you in 2004 and I had said, so the cost of the subscription is $15 a month, how long do you think that's going to last before they have to raise that price? What would you have said?
What would I have said? $15 a month? Well, we did have precedent though for subscription services at that first game. Yes. I would say that they weren't going to change it because we already had precedent at that point.
Ever. You know, you would have said they would never raise that price for the lifetime of the game.
No, I said that, like, how long it's going to take. I wouldn't be able to tell you. Like, I wouldn't be able to say a few years, right? When it comes to Games Pass, I'm going to say 5 years from now, Games Pass is going to cost more because we have precedent for that too.
Well, we do. I guess my argument here is that one, Warcraft has never raised their subscription price. It's been the same for the duration of the game, 16 years. And personally, I would have been the cynical one. I would have said maybe, you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, I don't know what the price is going to be. So I think that's impressive that the market forces have kept that price stable. That said, Blizzard's way around that has they found other sources of revenue that have allowed them to kind of like stealth raise the price of the they're generating revenue without needing to increase the price of the subscription. And I think, yes, most likely 5 years from now, the price of Games Pass goes up, most likely. But there might be some form of revenue out there that we're not thinking of, that Spencer's not thinking of, that all of a sudden they're like, hey, if we do this, we can keep the subscription price the same and we get more money this way. And, you know, there are things out there. So like, I'm not saying I'm disagreeing with you. I'm just saying like, maybe not though. Maybe not. Now, one thing I think we can both agree on, it's not going down.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's not going down. It's already a tremendous value, and obviously they're making money off it. It sounds like they are. Like at first, I thought they were losing money on it, but they were doing it because, you know, they're of the position they are in the market, and they're Microsoft, so they can afford to lose a few bucks. But it actually sounds like it's kind of really working out for them, and I just don't know how that works out on the back end with the developers and, you know, things like that. But
I want to sit down with the accountants that report to Phil Spencer, because I guess according to Phil Spencer, and therefore according to the accountants that report to him, that, you know, they've got this Games Pass price figured out where they're not losing money. They've got the Bethesda deal figured out where they're not losing money. All these deals where we're thinking like, yeah, maybe it should be a little bit closer. And they're like, no, we've got it all. We've got all the math worked out. And I kind of wonder, like, are the accountants like, I'm not saying Spencer's line because I believe and trust in him and, you know, buy Xbox. But I wonder if like maybe like the accounting department is just like, yeah, just give them those numbers. Don't give them these numbers.
Scratch that one out. Scratch that exactly. One out. Yeah, but you know, I guess like, you know, we'll see. Like as of right now, I haven't had a reason to have Games Pass, but like it's been working out for people who I know have it, so good for them. But no need to fear games, at least Microsoft games, leaving retail spaces anytime soon. So, but let's get into our final topic. Assassin's Creed is coming to Netflix. There will be an Assassin's Creed series. I'll just read the announcement from comicbooks.com here. As Netflix today announced a new live-action series based on the popular gaming franchise Assassin's Creed from Ubisoft. In addition to an extremely brief teaser image, Netflix... I thought it said teaser trailer when I first read that.
No, it's just an image. Just the logo. So
of course it's a brief image. image has no time. I'm sorry. Like, yeah, I broke that a little bit. I thought it said teaser trailer, but it's teaser image. You can't have a brief teaser image. Come on, comicbooks.com. You're better than that. In addition to an extremely brief teaser image, Netflix revealed that Ubisoft's Jason Altman and Danielle Krennic will serve as executive producers on the new endeavor. Further details are sparse at the moment, but the fact that it is in development at all is exciting. And to that, I say, I don't know, for a couple reasons. On both the Ubisoft side and the Netflix side. So let's just talk about from the Netflix side, period, right? If you want a good show canceled, put it on Netflix. Like, Netflix cancels good shit all the time. Altered Carbon, canceled. Santa Barbara died. It's not Santa Barbara. Santa Clara died. There you go. canceled. You know, Glow canceled. You know, they couldn't come up with another. They couldn't work with Marvel on those series. They canceled those. You know, so yeah. I mean, that's all. Like they cancel a lot of good shows, and then on top of that, Assassin's Creed is historical, and it's not like in the Wild West, right? We're talking about historical Italy, historical Greece, China, India, like all these places that have magnificent buildings and, you know, structures and stuff like that. You got to worry about the cost. They canceled Marco Polo because of the cost. From what I've read, Marco Polo cost nearly as much as Game of Thrones to produce.
Wow.
Marco Polo is another one. Marco Polo was a great show. You ever watch Marco Polo?
I did not.
I'd watch it. It's still worth it, even though they canceled it. Like, it's still worth it. It's season one, movie, season two. Okay? That's right. How you watch it. Okay. I expect to hear back from next week. Thanks, Nick. But the Marco Polo, like, was expensive to produce because it was a historical piece. And a lot of Marco Polo took place in fields, you know, it did. So like it's really like, that's what I'd be worried about, is that this show is going to be, if it's going to be good, it's going to be expensive to produce. And I don't know if any other studio is really doing like the techniques like they do at Disney with The Mandalorian, you know, using the LED screens and things like that. You know, they're still shooting shit on location. They're using green screens, you know, and I believe that technique is probably cheaper, you know, to do it more. It looks more realistic. But at the same time, like, you know, I just don't see, like, in order for this to be a success, it has to be a slam dunk. And I don't see an Assassin's Creed series being an absolute slam dunk, which brings it to the Ubisoft side. They have managed to make the game good, right? Like, the game was suffering. The game itself was suffering with the format that they had going into Black Flag. The best part of Black Flag was the naval combat. It was. And then they did that format again with Unity, and they had issues. And they did that format again with Syndicate. And then after Syndicate, that's when they ended up, you know, changing up the format, and that's how you get the Assassin's Creed Origins, Assassin's Creed Odyssey. So they basically recreated the game from scratch. But from a story perspective, no. The game is just not that great from a story perspective anymore. The story of Assassin's Creed Origins wasn't that great. The story of Assassin's Creed Odyssey wasn't that great. It was literally the gameplay that kept you in it. So my question would be, who's writing the show? Who's the showrunner? Who is writing it? Because that is what's going to matter. The Assassin's Creed movie was boring. I could not get through the first 20 minutes of that movie. Like, it was boring, you know? And yeah, so you need somebody that's going to write that the show well and make a cohesive story. And is it going to be along the side of the games? Or is it going to be the story of the games? I really hope not. Like, I think it has to run alongside of the games, you know, which is made possible now based off of something they, you know, stuff that they did in, like, was it Black Flag? Yeah, basically what they did in Black Flag. So you can have it run alongside. But yeah, I mean, I think this is an uphill battle. I mean, I'm glad that Cinemash will have something to talk about. You know, but at the same time, I'm just kind of like, I don't know, like, I just don't have a ton of faith in it, you know. Now, obviously, I haven't played Valhalla. Valhalla may have a great game and a great story, you know, it might have both, but I just don't think they're gonna produce a great story. Like, Ubisoft games, I can't remember the last Ubisoft game that really had a good story. To be honest with you, I'm trying to think.
I'd almost think if you want a good story out of Ubisoft, get Schreier to write a book about all the stuff that's been going on there, and then make a movie out of that, dramatize that.
Yeah, like, I'm trying to think of a Ubisoft title that had a great story. I did like the stories in the Rainbow Six Vegas series, but those are, that's a long time ago, you know? So yeah, I mean, I don't know. I give it two seasons.
Yeah, sounds about right. Just for it being on Netflix, like yeah, regardless of how good or bad it is, give it two seasons. That's about it. Yeah,
I will give it two seasons, and I would love to be proved wrong. Please prove me wrong. Please, like I'm not going to sit here and hate. I'm trying not to hate on it right now. I'm just saying the way I see it, based on both Netflix and Ubisoft. But I would love to be proved wrong. I would love to watch this show and be like, wow, they did a good job on it. So please, Ubisoft. Eves, I know you're listening. Like please. Oh, man. But go ahead.
If I'd come to you in 2004 and I said, how long until Netflix raises their prices? How long would you have given them?
In 2004, didn't Netflix? No, it didn't start in 2004. It started in when did Netflix start?
I think they were around then. I was getting Gamefly then, and Gamefly was the Gamefly. They were still doing the DVD service.
I was working at Best Buy in 2004, and Netflix was already a thing. That's how I started with Netflix, because we got Netflix for like $5, I think, because with the Best Buy discount. You know, I used to sell Netflix with appliances. I remember explaining to people that I was like, yeah, you don't got to go to Blockbuster anymore. You don't got to go to Blockbuster. They'll mail you the movie. It just takes a couple of days. Like, really? That sounds convenient.
Now you sell appliances that have Netflix.
Yeah. This is true. Yeah. So, but yeah, that's going to do it for us today. I'd like to thank you guys for listening. Coming up this week on Mash Those Buttons, once again, don't have the schedule pulled up, but we do have a new Clan of Three. I think I talked about Clan of Three last week, didn't I?
I think you did, yeah. Yeah, because I complained that it should have been Clan of Three and a Half.
Oh, yeah, three and a Half Mandalorians, that is right. So, yeah.
can I just say, and I don't want to give too many spoilers here, but that fight that took up the last part of that episode felt like I was watching a video game. That felt like a WoW raid. Like you had like 40 little people all right, with their little pea shooters running around shooting this big giant thing. And then it also felt a little bit like Shadow of the Colossus because that thing was just so massive. Like it was just watching that.
I want to say this about EA. If EA does not have a Mandalorian video game in production in some form, even if it's in the planning phase, they do not deserve to have that Star Wars license.
Okay. You know, the Mandalorian feels like what a video game movie or video game TV show should feel like, except that it's not based on a video game because I was thinking, okay, now I'm going to go into a little bit of spoilers. So if you didn't watch it, like check out if you haven't checked that already, but come back for the Jarrett talking about what's going to be on next week. But like, this felt like, it's like, you've got your legendary quest for the Boba Fett armor. You start at the Brawler's Guild and talk to Gore Koresh. He sends you to the new quest hub that is, Mos Pelgo. And then from there you do the quests there. And then you get your quest to go out, kill the new world boss. That's the Krayt Dragon. And so you get your 40 people together and you kill that. And then you go through the three phase fight where first you got to lure it out and then you hit the button and that moves it into phase two where it sticks its head out of the top. And then you got to dodge all the stuff while the two tanks go up and they tank it up at the top of the mountain until it tries to bite them. And then you go to phase three where now one of the tanks has to stand next to the bomb laden Bantha and then wait until that triggers the end of fight phase.
Yes. And even like the way he gets like his upgrades. With the armor,
mm-hmm,
you know.
Yes.
Even the way he gets his upgrades, like when he first got the bird whistle thing, it was like, yo, that's like being in a game. If EA is not making a Mandalorian game, they don't deserve the license.
You literally see his armor changes. He equips new stuff. Like it is a video game that we are watching. We're watching somebody else play a game. That's what we're going to find out. It's not that they're filming this with all those LED screens. They're actually playing this. They built the actual thing in the Unreal Engine, and that's what we've been watching. This is just somebody playing a new video game.
So yes, Clan of Three on Monday.
Yes, check it out.
check out Clan of Three. Listen to Nick Reed, listen to Ednar, Kura, and Death Squad talk about the latest episode of The Mandalorian. We also have a new Warcraft Reloaded, a new Double Tap on Warcraft. Obviously, Warcraft Reloaded is a WoW classic show, just to specify. We have a new Double Tap, which is for the fighting game community, a new Push the Point, which this is actually going to be the last Push the Point. They're going on their monthly schedule starting with this episode, I believe. And then they'll be back on normal schedule once the season starts. And there's also going to be a new Dropping Spicy for Apex Legends. There's going to be a new Torn and the Goblin and a new Wondrous Tales this week. So yeah, busy week. Actually, the weeks are going to be busy. We have at least 7 shows every week until the end of December.
Damn.
And that's not including another show that we might be launching in December. So yeah, it's going to be busy here for a while. But like I said, thank you guys for listening. You know, if you want to follow us, you can follow us on twitter.com/TheMashNetwork. Nick, what's your social media?
I am at WookieBH on Twitter. You can also find me, as Jarrett mentioned, very briefly on Clan of Three, also on the WoW Talk here on the Mash Those Buttons Network, and also on the Torn and the Goblin. This week, we will be talking about Kael'thas.
Yes, and you can find me on Twitter at Josh Tradamus, as well as on our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/MashThoseButtons. We'd love to have you join our Discord. Like I mentioned earlier, that's mash.gg/Discord. And you can join the Mash Those Buttons community there. And I encourage you guys to stay tuned after the show to hear more about Mash Those Buttons. I said that part early, so I won't say it again later. Sorry about that. And I encourage you guys to also reach out to us with comments and questions. And you can do that by either emailing us at contact@mash.gg, or you can send us a message on Twitter, or you can send us a message in the Discord. If you enjoy the show and you want to help us out, the best way to do that is to share the show with others and to rate and review the show on your favorite podcast platform of choice. If you want to take your support a bit further, you can support us on Patreon, which is patreon.com/mashthosebuttons, and help support Mash Those Buttons with tiers starting at $1 a month. You can gain early access to content as well as exclusive content. And we also have a Teespring store, which is teespring.com/store/mashthosebuttons. And we have Twitch subscriptions as well. If you want to subscribe to us on Twitch, that also helps support, or give some subs, you can do that as well. And yeah, with that, we are done for today. Thank you guys very much. We'll check you out next week.
Stay safe out there.
Thanks for listening to a Mash Those Buttons production. If you enjoyed the show, you should check out mashthosebuttons.com and see if any of our other shows might interest you. All of our shows are available on your podcast platform of choice like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. If you enjoy our content, you can help support Mash Those Buttons by becoming a patron at patreon.com/mashthosebuttons, where you can receive Patreon bonuses for as little as $1 a month. You can connect with Mash Those Buttons at twitter.com/TheMashNetwork, facebook.com/MashThoseButtons, or join our Discord at mash.gg/Discord.